We are on Chaf Vav Amud Aleph, right? So where did we leave off? We're on Chol, right in the middle. It says Cholim V'Misham Shehem, right? That they're sick people and those who are helping them. So they are all exempt from Sukkah. Not just the people that are sick themselves, but also even the helpers. So the Gemara first will deal with a sick person himself. By the way, I had this as a halach lamayit. I had this Shiloh one time. There's a fellow, father-in-law, someone in my shul, who unfortunately had fallen off of his roof when he was doing something, and he's become Rachmana Litzlan paralyzed. I don't know, it's a chance maybe he'll get better, Shabbat for Shlema. But in any case, so he was in the hospital, and they wanted someone to be able to help him out and stay with him, and he would prefer, obviously, a male. And women are exempt from Sukkah. It's a mitzvah asa, yishas man grama, men are chayiv in Sukkah. So the Shiloh was, is he allowed to encourage this person, ask this person, pay this person, whatever, to be doing that because it was over Sukkahs? And the guy obviously is not going to have that, well, not obviously, but the guy would not have access to a Sukkah. So what is he supposed to do? Is a person supposed to accept such a job? Shouldn't he accept such a job? Should he encourage him to accept such a job? The answer is, what do you mean? If he's the Shiloh, he's butter. Kol Misham Sheyem, exempt from Sukkah. Servant, the helpers, the ones that are assisting the sick people, nurses and whatnot. But it means anyone who's there as the shamish, like we have in the Neres Chanuk, right? There's the shamish. The shamish candle is the one that assists and lights all the others. Tana Rabbana. Chayla Sha'amru, the sick person that we spoke about in this Mishnah, that's exempt from Sukkah. Le'chayla Sha'esh by Sakana. It doesn't refer only to a sick person whose life is in danger. Even a sick person whose life is not in danger. Even if he has a pain in his eyes. Even if he has a headache, a pain in his head. Amar Shem Gamliel said, one time I had pain in my eye, in the Caesarea or whatever. Rabbi Yossi Baribi is not his last name. Baribi was a compliment. He's very, very sharp. That's what Rashi says. He was like the sharpest of his generation. It's funny. Not funny. It's interesting. I don't know. Maybe it's funny. The Mefarshim get into a discussion over here. He was really the sharpest? I thought Rabbi Meir was alive. And they start getting involved in who is really the sharpest of the generation at that time. So, but in any case. So there was a certain Rabbi Yossi. And he allowed me. He permitted me. Lishan ani. Umeshamashi. Chutzal sukkah. Myself and my helper to sleep chutz outside the sukkah.
What were they talking about?
Apparently being in the sukkah was problematic for his sickness. Yeah. No, I don't know the details, but apparently being in the sukkah was... I assume it meant he slept at home. I mean, he slept outside under the stars. He might have been in his house. I don't know, but because he had a fire there. I don't know. Whatever the issue was, he was able to... It was painful, more painful to be in the sukkah. Rav, Sharla Rav Acha Bar Dala, permitted Rav Acha Bar Dala, the migna, the kilta basukkah, to sleep. Migna is to sleep. Remember we talked about a kila? All these different types of tents, types of things. So if you have a bed that you're not allowed to sleep in a sukkah, because then you're considered to be in the bed and not in the sukkah. So Rav allowed Rav Acha Bar Dala to sleep in one of those in the sukkah. Basukkah, mishum buki. Because of Buki. Buki are some sort of bugs or something like that. Some sort of gnats or mosquito. I don't know. Whatever they were. Apparently, they were really driving this person crazy. And obviously, they were in the sukkah. But if you would go ahead and make some sort of, tent type of structure, they wouldn't be able to get in. So he allowed him to sleep in that. Basically, to sleep outside the sukkah. But maybe you could wonder now, we'll sleep in your house. Like, what's the point of sleeping inside the sukkah? Maybe there is a value in the sukkah, maybe because of certain opinions. Maybe, we can work that out. Why there might be an advantage to sleeping in it inside a sukkah instead of sleeping in it in your house. Rava, Charlotte Rav Acha Bar Ada, Rava allowed Rav Acha Bar Ada the Migna to sleep bar mitalalasa outside the sukkah, mishum sircha de gargishta, because of the spoiling or the bad smell of the floor. Apparently, Rashi writes, karka levana, they had some sort of white floor or limestone floor or something like that, shahayu tachin ba karkari sukkah, that they would, patch it up or something like that, like on the floor, whatever it was, whatever the stuff that they were using, it started to really smell. Now, everybody points out that if you build your sukkah in a way that it stinks, it really smells, you do not get the exemption of mitztoyer from your sukkah. Because you shouldn't have built it that way. And if you built it that way, you know, like a sukkah in Staten Island, you know? If you're going to be like your sukkah in Staten Island, you got to stay in your sukkah in Staten Island. Okay, it's a joke. Staten Island doesn't really smell that bad. But in any case, you know, the garbage dump, you know what I'm talking about? It's not a funny joke, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about, right? Staten Island is this huge garbage dump. All the garbage goes to Staten Island, you know this?
Really?
You got to do some research. I guess so. I didn't realize.
You haven't been around the block as much as you.
So, in any case, so what's going on over here? He built his sukkah in a way that it stunk? So it seems like it didn't stink generally, but if it would rain or it got moist or something like that, there were certain things that could happen to it that would make it smell. So they're not necessarily going to happen at all. It may never smell. But because the situation arose that it did happen, so then the sukkah started to really stink. So then he had the exemption. What are all these exemptions based on? Why is it that a person that's sick doesn't have to fulfill the mitzvah sukkah? It's just like a din d'rabbanan. Let me say it like this. Sometimes, most of the time, if there's some sort of din d'rabbanan, it's not their isa, it's d'rabbanan, and a person is sick, most of the time, so Chazal did not decree what they said in a situation when a person's sick. So that's that. There's nothing to talk about. So one very important example. Let's say it's Shabbos, and a person is sick. So you have something that's necessary for the person that's sick to get done. So you could tell a non-Jew to do it. Wait a minute. But you're not allowed to ask non-Jews to do things that's breaking Shabbos, correct? But is that their Raisa or their Abana? Their Abana. Their Raisa. You're not doing anything. The non-Jew's doing it. So what did you do? The non-Jew's not allowed to ask a non-Jew. Why not? Their Abana. Because if you were asking non-Jews, then Shabbos ends. You can have a non-Jew do any malacha you want. Could you please buy this stock? Press the button. Could you please? You can do anything. Mamish, anything. So, midrabbanan, you're not allowed to do things that are prohibited activities through a non-Jew on Shabbos. But if the person is sick, so then that situation, they weren't kosher that is there. So if a person's sick, he's allowed to ask a non-Jew to do something for him on Shabbos. What degree of sickness? Okay, we can get the detailed conversations. But point is that it's not pshat that because you're sick, then you can throw halacha out the window. Pshat is that halacha has a structure to it. And certain things were never decreed whenever there is a person that's in a situation where he's sick. So here too, when you have a person that's sick, what's the pshat? Why is it he doesn't have to sleep in the sukkah? It's not a din d'rabbanan, sukkah is d'oraisa. So because you're sick, you don't have to do mitzvahs? Doesn't make any sense. What's going on over here? So what's the answer? So the answer is this all goes back to the same principle we've been discussing called teshvu ke'ein taduru. That when the Torah says, with sukkahs teshvu shivas yamim, I want you to live in a sukkah, dwell in a sukkah. Not literally sit, right? That's an interesting discussion also. When we say the bracha, leishev b'sukkah, how do you translate that? Bracha to Hashem, l'kinam alech olam, asher kitchanu b'mitzvah tzivanu, leishev b'sukkah means to sit. Can you make the bracha standing?
To dwell.
Yeah, settle, but to dwell, to live, right? To live in the normal way you live the rest of the year in your house. So that's the halacha. You're supposed to live in the sukkah the way you would live in your house. What would happen if a person, Rachana Islan, is not feeling well? He would stay in a house where it's uncomfortable for him? There's no heat. So you have to stay in your house because there's no heat? You go to somebody else's house that has heat. You go somewhere else. If a person, Rachmana Islan, has to go to the hospital, you go to the hospital. If your roof collapses and now there's a hole in the roof, so you go someplace else. So just like a person wouldn't stay in his house, so too he's not obligated to stay in his sukkah. We're familiar with this when it comes to things like rain. So if it's raining in your sukkah, so if it's nothing, it's
still... The same thing with your house, so that's what we discussed earlier. It's, like, it's raining in your house, so you're going to leave your house and go somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it's mom is just a little misty or something like that, and it's not really affecting anything, okay, listen, sukkah is not as comfortable as your house. There's no question about it. So you have to be in the sukkah just because, you know, you're outside. That's the mitzvah sukkah. But if it starts to drip into your food and you're getting water in your food because it's dripping off the slag, it's ridiculous. You can't eat like that. So then you have a technical exemption because that's what the Torah says. The Torah says, "Vasukas teishavu shivas yamin." We're reading that to mean you should live in a sukkah, in parentheses, the same way in which you would live in your house for all 7 days of sukkahs. But you don't have to live in your sukkah more than you would live in your house for all of sukkahs. Therefore, any time you would leave your house, you also are allowed to leave your sukkah. That's why we discuss people are allowed to travel, people are allowed to be eating outside the sukkah when they're traveling, certainly to do a dvar mitzvah, etc., etc. People are allowed to do certain things Just like they would do in their house, they don't have the mitzvah sukkah in the same way.
Is there a problem with actually being in the sukkah if it was very uncomfortable?
Very good question. Is there a value to sitting in a sukkah with some kind of rain hat on and you're sitting there eating in the rain, being miserable? So the Rama in the Shulchan Aruch writes, you're called normal. Normal? Okay, probably not normal. Probably translated as stupid. Okay, I don't know. The Rama says, Nikra Hedyot. There's like a Kohen and a Kohen, Kohen Gadol and a Kohen Hedyot. So in that sense, it usually means like normal, like a regular one or something like that. But it's based on the Yerushalmi. And the Yerushalmi has this idea that if a person does something where he's not accomplishing anything, he's just called a Hedyot. So it seems to be a more or less a derogatory type of comment. That bottom line is that when you're doing a mitzvah and you're accomplishing something, you know, you're struggling and it's, you know, so great, that's beautiful. L'fum tzara agra, the more pain, the more gain. But when it comes to a mitzvah of sukkah, the mitzvah is only applicable when you're living in it like you live in your house. Therefore, if nobody would live in this, in their house in this type of situation, so then you're not fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkah by forcing yourself to stay there. So you're just getting wet. So if you like it, go ahead. But you're not accomplishing. What?
You wouldn't be kind of like a bubble
place or something like that? Probably not.
But
you're not accomplishing anything.
Right. You're not accomplishing.
Right. Oh. So it's also usher to be stupid.
Okay. People struggle with that.
So that's the Gemara says up until here. Sirchon de Gargishta, the spoiling, or the, whatever you want to call that, of the floor. Rava letame. Rava, who allowed this fellow, Rava Achabar Ada, to leave his sukkah because of the smell, goes according to his regular reasoning. The Amar Rava, because Rava said, meets the air, a person who is suffering, pater mina sukkah, is exempt from sukkah. So that's what this all comes down to, is that a person who is, Rachman Litzan, ill, on sukkahs, so if he's sick and there's no difference between being inside and being in the sukkah, so that he doesn't have an exemption. But most of the time, it's much more comfortable for a person who's not feeling well to be in an environment that helps him to get better. And if he's in a sukkah, that makes him feel worse. And if that's the case, then he is exempt from sukkah. We did not get to his helpers yet. Asks the Gemara a question. But didn't we learn in the Mishnah? Cholin u'misham sheyem piturim mina sukkah. Sick people, and also there are helpers, but we'll leave that out for now. Sick people and their helpers are exempt from sukkah. So, what did the Mishnah not mention? It said a person who's sick. I'm leaving aside helpers for a minute, but it said sick people and their helpers. Sick people and their helpers are exempt from sukkah. So it's sick people that are exempt, but not uncomfortable people. Aren't these levels of uncomfortability? If a person's uncomfortable, there's too many bugs. So, okay, he's not sick, you know. But then there's a level called sick. So these are all levels of pain, levels of uncomfortability. Yeah.
But also, can they go by the, like, the same concept we were discussing before about it means the shape of sukkah, like the way you would dwell in your house, you have to dwell in the sukkah. So
yeah.
If you had a lot of bugs in your house, getting to a point where it's just unbearable, you'd probably leave. Now that's what
happens. Yes. Yes, but think about it for a minute. What the Gemara is doing is not asking a question, misvara. Or you're asking a svara question. You're saying, but I mean, come on, if there's an exemption, there's an exemption. That's the thought process, is uncomfortability. So just like you'd be so uncomfortable to your house, isn't that the way this works? The Gemara is asking a technical question. The Gemara is saying, but wait a minute. But the Mishnah said only people who are sick are exempt. It didn't say a person who's suffering from bugs or something else. It's a technical question.
Right.
Now that may force us to re-examine our thought process and the dynamic that I just spelled out. Maybe what I just presented is wrong. Because the Mishnah is against it. Right?
Right.
So that's how the Gemara always works. That's the best question. Because it forces you to reevaluate your thought process. Based on our thought process, we may come to all kinds of conclusions. Says the Gemara, the Mishnah's against your old thought process. You've got to reevaluate. So let's read it again. V'ha, anan tanan, but didn't we learn in the Mishnah, cholin u'misham sheyem p'turim mina sukkah? Sick people and their helpers are exempt from sukkah. Chola in, a sick person, yes. Mitzdar lo, a person is in pain, no. Now, this question is based on the assumption that the Mishnah is delineating the threshold of uncomfortability. So let's show me make that clear. What we're assuming is there's a lot of things that can make a person uncomfortable by being in the sukkah. There's a million things that can make a person uncomfortable about being in the sukkah. Isn't the Mishnah saying you have to be technically a sick person? There's some sort of definition here. You have to be sick. If you're not sick, then you didn't reach that exemption. So, you know, if it's just uncomfortable for you, you know, whatever, too bad on you. You're not sick. Now, what's the definition of sick? We may have to get more precise about that. But there's some kind of definition called a chole, and the Gemara assumes that a person just has a little headache, a person has a little pain in your eyes, a person is just bothered by mosquitoes, that's not good enough to be called a sick person. Good? The Gemara is about to reject that entire way to read the Mishnah. Now you'll notice the way I read the Mishnah was, sick people, they're helpers. Because it's two different categories, and we're talking about sick people, and we're talking about their helpers. And we're not dealing with their helpers right now, we're focusing on the sick. See what? Listen to what the Gemara does now. Amri, they said, chole, when we're talking about a sick person, hu misham shav. He is exempt, and also, and so too are all the people that are assisting him. Peturin. Mitzdoyer, if a person is just uncomfortable, he's suffering, hu pater, he's exempt. Misham shav lo, but not his helpers.
Usually the helpers
are also. Hold on a second. Before we ask any questions, Mrs. Savara, what did the Gemara just say? How did that answer the question? The Mishnah said sick people are exempt. So if you're not sick, you're beneath that, you're uncomfortable, you're not exempt. How did we answer that? No, it says sick people and their helpers. If a person's just uncomfortable, then his helpers are not exempt. What? What did I miss? How did it answer the question?
You're sick enough that you need helpers. I mean, if you're uncomfortable, you have no helpers. But if you're sick to the point where you need helpers, that's
how you get a lot of comfortable people.
Okay.
Since I got comfortable people are not exempt, right?
Yeah.
So why does it say right after uncomfortable people are not exempt?
The reason why a sick person is exempt is because there's a concept called mitzta'er, uncomfortable.
Right.
But we may be forced to define uncomfortable as technically sick, whatever that means. As a doctor's note. However we'll define it. We need a definition, I agree. But whatever, however we'll define it, there's something that's called sick. And we can all agree that if a person's uncomfortable, he's got a little headache, he's not sick. Maybe sick means he has a fever and he's in bed, like he's stuck in bed, whatever it is. Fine. But how did they want to answer the question? So, suggestions? So what do you want to say, Rafa?
I want to say that what our answer says basically, no, because it says sick and their helpers.
Yeah.
So we're saying, how does that answer the question of, like, what about Mistar, right?
Yeah, but doesn't that mean that sick people and not an uncomfortable person?
Right, and so then we say that, how do we answer that? We say, oh, sick people and their helpers. So I was suggesting that it's not, because by the fact that somebody needs helpers, meaning if you have a headache, okay, that's right, that's Mistar, that's not really sick. But if you're sick to the point where you need someone to tend to you, you need to go to a hospital, you need someone, you're throwing up, whatever it is, you need something, that's yeah. Different. So that's how it answers by saying that.
Well, but that would mean that a person that has a headache is not exempt.
Right.
But we're saying that they are. We just had three different cases in the Gemara that the guy who hated mosquitoes and the guy that had eye pain, the guy that had a headache, all three of them are all exempt from sukkah, even though they're not sick.
And so we ask, what do you mean? How do you say that?
But it says only sick people are exempt in the Mishnah. These guys aren't sick. The answer is, no, the Mishnah said sick people and their helpers. What? What did I miss?
I don't even understand the answer to the question.
Wait, the question you understand?
I understand your question. I don't understand how that Gemara...
That's what we're stuck on. How's Gemara answering the question? So, my hunch is that the Gemara is answering you're reading the Mishnah wrong. The Mishnah is not really trying to make two separate categories. The Mishnah is really trying to say, Misham Shehem Shel Cholim. The Misham Shehem of Cholim are Pater from Sukkah. How does the Mishnah say that? Cholim and Misham Shehem. The sick people and those who are helping them. Of course, the people that are sick, obviously. That's not the point of the Mishnah. The point of the Mishnah is the helpers are the sick people, so they're also exempt. That's how we want to read the Mishnah.
Then how do you define Mistar?
Uncomfortable due to the sukkah. It's much broader. So if the focus was two categories, cholim are exempt and misham shem are exempt, well, then a chol is exempt, but not a person who's just uncomfortable. Says the Gemara, no. It's not the Mishnah Meh. The reason why the Mishnah is focusing on Misham Shayim is because it's trying to say the Mishamshim Shel Cholim are exempt. But we'll kill two birds with one stone. We'll point out to you, by the way, it's just, no, the sick people are also exempt. But they're not the only people that are exempt. Also, anybody who's mitztoyer, who's uncomfortable, is exempt if it's due to the sukkah. What the focus of the Mishnah is the helpers. That's what I would guess as a quick read of the Gemara. And the Gemara is trying to answer. Next, for some reason, the Gemara does not deal right now with the Mishamshim. Why not? What happened to the Mishamshim? Why are the Mishamshim exempt? What is the next? What is the Gemara going on to? Anybody following? Eating. You're allowed to eat snacks outside the sukkah. Hello? What happened to the Mishamshim? So what do you say? You have an answer? Just like, is it obvious? Based on what we've covered in the Gemara, is there anything else that you could argue that you know that the Mishamshim are exempt? Well, what else was in this Mishnah, by the way? What did this Mishnah cover? What concepts? What exempts?
If I was telling you somebody that was in his house, and that person had to leave his house, go to a hospital or something, and I was to help her, I'd have to leave to go with him. So, dwelling in my sukkah, like I live in my house, if I have to leave my house, I'd have to leave my sukkah, no? If the person I'm tending to leaves.
Wait, you're asking a question?
No, I'm saying, I'm answering like why Mishamshim isn't something they have to address. if someone is a chayla, and he has Mishamshim, right? So the chayla of Bada, he's the father, right? So if he has to leave his house, let's say, whatever the reason is, the chayla has to go to, a doctor, right? So he goes to the doctor. If he a helper would go with him. Maybe that's how, in a normal situation, it would work.
Okay.
So that person leaves, and I have to leave as well.
Okay.
I'm not saying don't come back.
So why is he exempt? Why is the helper exempt from sukkah? We have certain principles to exempt the person from sukkah. Right? What's his exemption? Why is he exempt? Now, do you hear the question? Did it bother you? If it doesn't bother you, then I'm leaving. The question is, we understand the chola. The chola is exempt because he's mitztoyer. Because you don't even have to be sick. You could just be uncomfortable. If you got a phone, get rid of it. We're going to learn now, and I want to tell you something, and I think it's an amazing chiddush. If you listen to me, you will understand how to read this Mishnah, and you'll see something, you're like, that makes a lot of sense. But you have to listen. The Mishnah, so chol, let's ask the question, and then we'll answer it. The question is, the cholim are exempt because of mitztoyer, because they are uncomfortable. You don't have to be a cholah, but a cholah certainly is of the level that he is exempt. But we have not explained how the helpers are exempt from sukkah. And the Gemara doesn't do it. And that doesn't make any sense. Because the Gemara always asks questions that don't make sense in the Mishnah. Why is it not explaining this? So what must be the answer, Jeremy? Because we already know. We already know why they're exempt. Amiel, do you know why they're exempt? The key to answer this question is what the Gemara just said about Misham Shena. I thought it's a chola that's exempt, and therefore a person who's just uncomfortable should be chayev in sukkah. That's if you read, ready for this? That's if you read the Mishnah to be two different categories of people. There are cholim, and there are Misham Shena. So then cholim are exempt, but mitzvah is not. When Gemara said, is that the right way to read the Mishnah? No, that is the wrong way to read the Mishnah. What's the right way to read the Mishnah? Misham Sheyem Shel Cholim are exempt from Sukkah. The Cholim obviously are exempt. That's Mitztoyer. But the real way to read this Mishnah is the Mishamshim of the Cholim are exempt. It's not really talking about the Cholim. Are you with me on that? Yes? Now, if you read the Mishnah that way, go back to the Mishnah. Go back to the Mishnah. It's a chaval of chafei manal. The Mishnah says, Shluchei mitzvah piturin mina sukkah. Now, you may want to argue this, right? Let's be honest. You're a little uncomfortable with the answer of the Gemara, right? Because it doesn't say misham sheyem shel cholim. It says cholim u'misham sheyem. So the Gemara like weasel out of this, right? Isn't that how you all feel? Adam feels that.
I feel better if, for example, they brought another brisa that proved it. That kind of said the same thing. So this Krishna must be teaching us something new.
Right.
It's
almost like we just gave a quick answer to just kind of like get you off my back. Right?
Yeah.
This Mishnah must mean what the Gemara said. Let's read it together. Shluchi mitzvah peturin min sukkah. Shluchi mitzvah are exempt from sukkah. That's halacha A. What's halacha B? Cholin umisham shayin peturin min sukkah. Does that have anything to do with the first phrase or nothing to do with the first phrase?
The first
halacha is people who are shluchi mitzvah. So what's the exemption there? Osik b'mitzvah pater min mitzvah. We learn that even though you're not active in a mitzvah, but anyone who's involved in a mitzvah, which includes on your way there, traveling, but you're traveling to do a mitzvah, you're exempt. Zok Rashi, Rishas Chani Asan. Even when you're camping out, you're sleeping, you're not traveling actively right now. If you were traveling for a Dvar Rishus or something optional, then when you're not traveling, you're chayiv in sukkah. But if you're on your way to do a mitzvah, then even when you're not traveling, you're still exempt from sukkah. That's called shluchei mitzvah. Osek b'mitzvah pater min mitzvah. As long as you're involved in it, even if you're not actually active in it, any involvement is enough to exempt you from sukkah. If the next phrase is cholim are exempt from sukkah, then the Mishnah is introducing a whole new exemption called mitztoyer.
That's kind of the helpers are involved in this first phrase of the Mishnah.
If the Mishnah is saying cholim are exempt, that's because they have exemption of mitztoyer. And then the Gemara goes to say, and also misham shayim are exempt, and we have no idea why. But if the Mishnah is really trying to say the mishamshim of cholim are exempt from sukkah, so then it's on the coattails of shluchei mitzvah. Because a person that's helping someone sick, what's he doing? Bikur cholim. He is helping a person who is sick. He's doing a mitzvah. So a person that's helping someone who's sick also is considered to be just like shluchei mitzvah. So it's two categories or two types of osek b'mitzvah, pater min mitzvah, that only works if you read this phrase as the mishamshim of cholim. Because if you read it as cholim umisham shayim, then what you're saying is there's an exemption called osek b'mitzvah pater min mitzvah. There's an exemption called mitztoyer pater min sukkah. And then, I forgot to mention before, we'll go back to where we started. No, it's one phrase. Why did it have to say it as cholim and misham shayim? Because it wanted you to know that the cholim are also exempt. You shouldn't think it's only the helpers. The cholim is also exempt. But it's not the point of the Mishnah. It's an additional information. But it's not the point of the Mishnah. And that justifies how the Gemara read it that way.
Well, the Mishnah kind of throws us all off by saying cholim. You know? If it just didn't say cholim, it would make sense.
Yeah, it wants to draw your attention to that as well. It's true.
If it didn't say cholim, then what's the point of that second phrase?
It would have only been a misconception.
No, it would just make it obvious. First of all, it would be obvious that the cholim would be exempt.
You're right, so why would it say it?
The real reason it has to say it, because let's say it had said misham shayim shel cholim peturim min sukkah. What would the Gemara have said? Misham shayim in cholim lo? The misham shayim are exempt and the chol is not? And the Gemara would have to say, no, he really is, because of mitztoyer. So the Mishnah saved us that aggravation. The Mishnah says cholim are exempt and the misham shayim are exempt. The cholim are exempt for a different reason. But if it would have said misham shayim shel cholim, we would have asked the kasha, why aren't the cholim exempt? What about mitztoyer? We would have ended up with the whole conversation all over again. So either way, you're going to have a problem.
But it would make more sense. Meaning, it would be obvious for us that cholim would be exempt.
It would be redundant. What's the point to say it is a mitzvah? We know it's a mitzvah, so why are you telling me that? I mean, you're saying, shulchan mitzvah is better than a mitzvah, right? Okay, fine. So why are you telling me now somebody who goes to see, somebody does a mitzvah, but he's also better than a mitzvah? We know that from the first phrase. If there was a charlan to teach us also a charlan, yeah, it's going to tell us the other thing too, but also, meaning otherwise I could ask you,
what's the But if it's connecting it to the first phrase, right, we have halacha A, right?
Yeah.
The most logical thing would give an example of A, which would be the helpers of the sick people, not the sick people.
But they're not shluchei mitzvah.
Cholin has a different idea.
Oh, totally.
What we're discussing right
totally.
Now.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah.
So it would make more sense in the Mishnah to say, halacha A, that example of philosophy, example being...
But it doesn't give any, it doesn't give any example.
It doesn't, it just says holding...
It's just a rule.
Yeah, it's just a rule.
Anyway, but that at least answers the question of why the Gemara... It answers two questions. It helps us flesh out, number one, what gives the Gemara the right to answer this question of cholim in mitztoer lo? No, it means mesham sheyem shel cholim. Oh, come on. What gives the Gemara the right to say that? The answer is no, no, no. That's actually what the Mishnah makes more sense when you start to think about it. It's actually talking about osik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. It's not talking about mitztoer. Mitztoer got snuck in there because it's mentioning the cholim, so it mentions, you know, the cholim, which is a patur mitztoer. But that's not what the Mishnah is talking about. And then it answers the question, why the Gemara doesn't now ask, well, why are the Mishamshim exempt? The answer is, we discussed it already. Osik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah.
Our Mishnah just openly state the fact that
well, because if it had said Mishamshim shel cholim are patur, the Gemara would have then asked, Mishamshim are exempt, then the cholim is not. And we could have dealt with it that way. We could have dealt with it that way. But the Gemara preferred to, the Mishnah preferred, to say the Cholin is exempt for his reason, and the Mishamshim are exempt for his reason.
It's why the Mishnah
says Cholin. It
does.
It's what it says.
It does say that.
It does. That's what was bothering the Gemara in the first place. The implication of that, it's only if you're Cholin and not if you're a lower degree of Mitztoer. And so the Gemara had to flesh that out. No. Because really the focus of the Mishnah is on Osek B'mitzvah, Batum and HaMitzvah. And therefore really the focus is on the Mishamshim. But it didn't want to say the chol. It didn't want to imply the chol is not exempt. So it had to say he's also out. He's also exempt. But it's for a different reason. But the Gemara does go on to address the eating, which is the last part of the Mishnah. You're allowed to eat things that are snacks outside the sukkah, which of course is not related to osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. But so that's a good question why it's in the Mishnah. But in any case, v'kama achilas aroi. So how much is considered to be a snack? Now, it's interesting. The Gemara could have said what type of food is called a snack. Did you notice that? It says how much. How much of what? Anything?
So how much anything could be a snack?
What does it mean? So that's the answer. The answer is that certain things are obvious that they're snack foods. Anytime a person eats certain things, everyone agrees that's a snack. There are certain foods that you could eat a small amount of, but yeah, well, I don't know if I agree with that, but there's certain, things that a person could eat a small amount of, and it'd be defined as a snack. He might have to bench, but it's defined as a snack because of the amount that he ate.
So does it have to be defined by everyone as a snack, or is it just what to your own?
So what's going to come out of this is that there will be certain types of food that you're always allowed to eat outside of the sukkah, even in large quantities, because they're snack foods. But then there are going to be certain types of foods where, if they're eaten in larger quantities, is a meal. We're talking about bread, obviously. Things like bread, perhaps even cakes and things like that, pasta baba kisnin. But anything that's of the bread family, in large quantities, will be considered a seuda, a real meal. Achilas keva is how the Gemara will call it. A fixed type of meal, a sit-down meal. Whereas a smaller quantity is something that a person might eat simply as a snack, as an achilas aroi. I think it's kind of like, you know, on the go. So that's what the Gemara is saying. The kama achilas aroi. Even something which lends itself to meal food, it could be a snack in a small amount. To how much is considered to be a snack amount? Amr v'yosef, tarti oitlas b'ye. 2 or 3 eggs. That's a volume. The volume of 2 or 3 eggs. Of course, you're going to ask, well, 2 or 3? Why do you have to say 2 or 3? Is it 2 or is it 3? But in any case, Amar le Abaye. Abaye said to Rav Yosef, v'hazimnin sagiyin sagi le le'inshe b'hachi. But v'ha, behold, zimnin, there are times, sagiyin sagi le, it's like a phrase, that it's sufficient for him, le'inish, to a guy, b'hachi, with that. And that will be a fixed meal. What does he mean? By saying, you know, sometimes a person is hungry and he wants some sort of snack. So a person can eat a snack where he still feels hungry, but, you know, it filled him up enough to go on. And sometimes it's enough. I really, you know, I'm good. I'm really good. That's all I needed. So says Abaye, so if that's all you needed, what's the difference between that and a meal? How do you define it based on the amount? Sometimes a person can have a lesser amount than mamash before.
So why does it define a snack versus
like
a meal?
It's like pulling you over. Why does anyone have a snack? It's because, like, all right, it's a long time, so it's another couple, three more hours, whatever, to my next meal. I'm kind of hungry right now, so let me get, like a bar to have right now that will pull me over to my meal.
Right. So Abai is basically saying, because sometimes you go to like a, I was at a yeshiva dinner recently, and the plate it was an hors d'oeuvre type of plate, and it had like three compartments that were like this big. There was like quinoa in this amount, and like I've never experienced such a small. But it looked very nice, you know. So there are times when a person will sit down, he'll have like a very small roll, and that'll be the roll at the meal. But sometimes we're like, oh, challah. So, like, it really depends. How do you... Abai basically saying, I need you to define this better. What is going to give this some teeth that sometimes you snack, sometimes you don't, you know, two or three eggs? I mean, where are you coming from? So, Elam Rabai. Rather, Abai said, Kidetoyim bar beirav v'ayol l'kala. You'll have to see if this makes it any better for you. Kidetoyim, like that tastes, bar beirav, the son of the house of the Rav, which means a Talmud Chacham, a guy learned from the Beis Medrash, a Bar Beis Medrash, Ba'ayil, and he goes up, L'kala, Kala here means the shear. Like, what do they call that? Yarche Kala, right? What did Abaye just say? Basically, what used to be in Abaye's time is that people would wake up in the morning and they would just eat some kind of light breakfast to hold themselves over until after the shear. After the shir, they would come back, they would have some sort of, you know, lunch or brunch or whatever exactly it was. That was the culture, that's what they did at the time. So Abaye says, that type of eating that we have, nobody fills themselves up. It's mamish, just a snack to hold you over past the shir. So whatever. So he doesn't want to say it's two or three eggs. He's saying it's like, maybe it depends on the person, I don't know, it's a little bit more abstract, he doesn't really define it so well. But it's more of a perspective or an attitude. That type of eating is a holdover. That just carries you over until you're going to eat. But you're planning on eating, and this is just to hold you over past the shear to get to lunch. That's the type of food that's considered to be a snack. You're allowed to eat a snack outside the sukkah. But you're not allowed to take a nap outside the sukkah. Okay. How does this work? Why is it that you could have a snack outside the sukkah, but a nap you can't? My time, what's the reason? Amar Ravashi, Ravashi said, Gezeira Shema Yiradeim. You're right, it should have been the same. We make a gezeira because we're afraid if a person takes a nap, he's going to fall asleep. Last night, I was sitting on the couch, right? And my wife and I were supposed to go shopping. And all of a sudden, Azaria says, I need new shoes. I need new shoes. I need new shoes! Ah! Okay, so we got to at least go shopping for him. At least, you know, make him feel like we're working on getting him new shoes. So my wife, you know, takes out her phone, Amazon, whatever, you know. Okay, let's look for new shoes. You want this, you want this, you want this. So I said, ha! I'm just taking a nap. I was not tired. I was not tired. And I just said, I'm just going to sit here and take a nap. I'm just going to wait for you guys to finish this. And I fell asleep. Before I knew it, I was sound asleep. What? That's called sleep deprivation.
And then you wake up the next day.
Yeah, it would have happened, I'm sure.
Is it taking a nap inherently, like, what do they mean? What is it, because taking a nap is falling asleep. And like back in that time, I think they had alarms to the point where you can like wake yourself up.
Try to get a power naps.
Yeah, but that's what an alarm usually to wake you up from that power nap.
Okay, so good, you're asking good, you're asking good. Let's go through the Gemara. Okay, hold on a second. Let the Gemara talk, and then if you still have a question, you'll ask it then. Gezeirah Shema Yiradeim, you should have been allowed to take a nap just like you're allowed to eat a snack outside the sukkah, but there's a gezeirah, afraid a person's going to fall asleep. Amar le'abaye, Eloha desanya, what are you going to do with this that we learn in the Braisa? Yashen Adam Shinas Arvai B'Tfilin. You're allowed to take a nap in Tfilin. Now this, of course, is not halacha l'maisa, but there is an opinion, or was an opinion, that you're allowed to take a nap in your tefillin. But you're not allowed to go to sleep in your tefillin. So says Abaye, wait a minute. If there's a gzeira that we're afraid a person is going to fall asleep, then 100% it should have been a gzeira by tefillin. By virtue of the fact that you see from this braisa, there's no gzeira by tefillin. You're allowed to take a nap in tefillin. So it must mean that we don't make such a gzera. Lichush shema yiradeim. Let us be concerned lest he fall asleep. Amar Rav Yosef, braid Rabbi Loi. Rav Yosef, the son of Rabbi Loi, explained that braisa. B'moyser shinasay la'acherim. When he gave over his sleep to someone else. Now, I'm actually interested in this type of investment. If anyone has any sleep that they would like to give to me, I'm willing to take it. I'd like to take it if you want to share your sleep with me. But most are shinas lachem when you give over your sleep to someone else. Okay, what does it really mean? That's your alarm clock. The only time you're allowed to take a nap in your tefillin is when you give your sleep to someone else. Meaning, you're asking them, wake me in a few minutes. Only when you told somebody else to wake you. But if you don't have anybody else to wake you, then obviously the gzera would apply. It's the same problem. That mishnah says you're allowed to take a nap in your tefillin is only when you ask somebody to wake you. Maskifle Rav Misharsha. Rav Misharsha asked an attack question. Arvich arvot sarich. You need Klaysel Aravim Zeleze. You know, you need an Arav for your Arav. What do you mean an Arav for an Arav? Say, if you have someone, you ask, you're going to sleep. You say, please wake me in 10 minutes. Well, what's going to make sure they stay awake? Maybe they're going to fall asleep. So you can, they're going to need to tell somebody else to wake them so you can be woken up by that person. He's not going to fall asleep. So it's not in the devil's self. It's never going to end. It's so not true, or is true?
It's so not true.
Not true? Everyone always wakes you?
Yeah.
This past Shabbos, I don't want to name any names, but there was someone, and I said to them, please, I want to lie down for a maximum of half an hour, 2:30, please wake me up. No problem. I will wake you. What happened?
They fell asleep.
At about 2:40, 2:40 wasn't so bad. It wasn't such a big deal. But 2:40, whatever, 2:45, the person said, I'm so sorry. I fell asleep, but I woke up and I'm waking you. Right? That's this case. Happens all the time.
No, it's not. But that's. I'm sure that can happen in real life. But they're saying there's no end to it. Like that guy's gonna have to have someone watch him. No, like.
You mean he doesn't actually say in the dub or so? Maybe it would be enough to have one person in mind. Yeah. Maybe that's enough. Maybe you're right. The Mishnah in Yuma says in the dub or so by, you know, like the backup wife. You know, if we're a backup wife, you need a backup wife. But need a backup for the backup. You sold that too. Then the same in the davar sof. There it says explicitly in the davar sof. Here you're pointing out it doesn't actually say in the davar sof. Good point. Okay. Elo Amar Rabba Bar Chana Amar Rabbi Yoichanan. So rather the case of the tefillin, b'meiniach rosho bein birkav askinan. We're talking about a person that put his head between his knees. Is what we're dealing with. Literally. The only time that you're allowed to take a nap with your tefillin on is when you put your head in between your knees and basically you're not going to fall asleep because it's too uncomfortable. Your body's going to fold over and it's going to be so uncomfortable you're going to wake up. On what? I don't know. But right. It's like putting a buzzer under your head so when your bed hits you, you know, something like that. So what's the bottom line? The bottom line is that so far we have explained the prohibition of taking a nap outside of a sukkah is because we're afraid that a person is really going to fall asleep a shinas keva. And if he sleeps a shinas keva, that you're not allowed to do outside of a sukkah. So because of that, you're not allowed to take a nap outside of a sukkah. What do you mean? If we're afraid of that, why should we be afraid of it by tefillin? The answer is, we are. The only time you're allowed to sleep with your tefillin on is when you put your head between your knees. Can you do that in terms of sukkah then?
You can do it in your house. You just sit down with your head between your knees.
Yeah. Why can't the concept apply to food also? As in, I've been in situations where I started eating snacks and then like subconsciously, because I usually eat in my house, I'm like, okay, like let me just grab this. And then I start eating, I'm like, oh wait. It's not like we... Obviously you have the intention of eating a snack, but...
Okay, does anybody want to answer that? It's a good question. How come we don't make a gzera? You're not allowed to snack because you might end up eating a full meal.
You might think
what's the difference? Right? What's the difference? I mean, it's a clear difference, right? What's the difference between a nap that's going to turn into sleep versus a snack that's going to turn into a meal?
What does that
mean? It's like a separate action, right? Because in order to continue your meal, you actually have to continue your meal. But to fall asleep longer, you're just falling asleep longer. It's more automatic. I think there's a significant distinction. Rava Omar, Rava said, Ein keva l'sheina. There is no such thing as keva t'sheina. I think you said this also, Jamie, Shemam Shon Target today, that Rava thinks there's no such thing as a nap. No such thing as a nap? Yeah? What's a nap?
There's a nap. There's a deep sleep or not deep sleep.
Yeah, there are different madrigas of sleep. But is there such a thing as a nap? Rava says, no such thing. Sometimes a person can sleep for mamash a couple of minutes, wake up and be like, wow, I feel like I just slept for an hour.
I think it's scientifically proven you can't get into deep sleep within like 20 minutes.
I can prove them wrong.
Deep sleep doesn't mean you're not deep sleep. Deep opposite. You sleep more than 20 minutes. Yeah. They're saying that if you're going to go deeper to sleep and if you're working up, you're going to feel dead tired.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
20 minutes is like a sweet spot where like they need a deep sleep, but right. You're going to feel rejuvenated.
Yeah. Yeah. Tani Chada. One Tana said, Yashin Adam Mitzvillin, Shinas Aroy, Avalo Shinas Keva. You're allowed to sleep in your tefillin, a nap, but not an actual going to sleep. V'tanya idach, and there's another brace, another tana that said, bein keva bein aroi, you're not allowed to sleep in your tefillin, I don't care if it's a keva sleep or it's a nap. V'tanya idach, and there's another brace, another tanya, the tana that says, loy keva v'loy aroi, you're not allowed to sleep at all. So you have three opinions. One says, naps are okay. One says, nothing's okay. And one says, everything's okay. What? Everything's okay? No one says that, right?
No one says everything's okay.
So what's the difference between the first and the third? Yashin Adam Mitzvillin Shinas Aroy V'Alo Yishinas Keva. Naps okay. Number two, naps. Number one is naps okay. Number two is Bein Keva Bein Aroy. What does that mean? You're allowed to sleep in your tefillin. You're allowed to go to sleep in your tefillin. That's the second opinion. But Tani Edek, the third opinion is, Loi Keva V'Loi Aroy, not allowed to sleep at all. So what do you mean? Is there three different opinions, three different Tanas? What are the arguments? What's going on over here? Loi Kasha. No. It's not a question. It's all one opinion. How so? Hadinakit Lehu V'yade. Hadimanchei B'reshe. Hadiparis Sudara Iluya. There are three cases. One is when he's holding them in his hand. One is when they're on his head. And one is when he put some sort of sudar, a blanket or something, on top of them.
So you're not allowed to sleep, which like, is it going into chronological order right now?
That's what we have to figure out. So should Rashi make it fast? Rashi, do not get lay biyadei. If he's holding his tefillin in his hands, no. Loi keva v'loi aroi, shema yiplu miyado. You would have thought that he's allowed to take a full sleep, right? That's what you would have thought, because he's holding him in his hands. What's to talk about? So he says, no, then he's not allowed to sleep at all because we're afraid he might drop them. What? So there's got to be a case where he's wearing them and he can go to sleep? Okay, so Rashi says if he's holding them in his hands, he can't sleep at all because he's going to drop them. The mancha bereshe, if they're on his head, he's allowed to take a nap, but he can't go to sleep because we're afraid he's going to pass gas. The part is sudar alayu, so the only case that's left is what? What? What's left? The whole night. What? The part is sudar alayu, puts a blanket on top of them. He nicham eitzel merasha isav. He's not wearing them. He leaves them next to his head, but they're wrapped up. Bein keva bein aroy, b'lenit natarim alach ayasharis. So then, you know, listen, at the end of the day, we're all people. We got to go to sleep eventually. And sometimes there has to be a way to just, you know, put your tefillin somewhere. So as long as they're wrapped up in your tefillin bag, so then you're allowed to go to sleep with your tefillin and tefillin bag, you know, next to you. So, is there a good stopping place here? All right, we'll just stop there for today.
Do we continue with the discussion about that?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a continuation, but we'll pick it up tomorrow, Mitzvah Shem.